Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, spicing you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are back with a massive UFC event this week in UFC 307. Alex Pereira back for his third title defense of 2024 as he takes on the powerhouse puncher, Khalil Roundtree Jr. We have your entire UFC 307 preview and predictions on today's show. I'm pumped. Honestly, I am pumped to go over all of it. There's not too many fights compared to Paris. I think Paris, we had to talk about 14 fights, only 12 for UFC 307. We're going to be diving into that today. Also going to be talking about the UFC rankings fiasco. I see a lot of people online were upset about where Renato Moicano ended up in the rankings. We're going to take a look at the UFC rankings and see kind of what's going on there. Also going to be looking at the top fantasy football players per position so far through the first 4 weeks. Of course, top 10 new things in pop culture, and as always, we kick things off with new UFC news. And if you haven't listened to it already, go check out part one and part two of episode 126, where we have three special guests, my good friends Jane Watson, Cole Walker, and Ryan Neihardt, who joins us for the first time. Ryan, as they go through, all of us go through the NHL preview for the upcoming season, which they're very passionate about hockey. Me, not so much, but I always do like to hear different perspectives from things. Plus, they're all my boys, so you know I had to give them. They wanted to come on. I'm like, you know what? You can come on the podcast and talk about things. It was an absolute blast. Go check that out. But to kick things off, you already know, we do it every time. New UFC news. As of right now, nothing. The year's kind of all set. I'm pretty sure 2024, we know all the remaining events. We do a couple Apex events after we go to Utah for this pay-per-view. Then we go to Abu Dhabi. We kick November off. I believe we go to Edmonton in Edmonton, Canada. I don't know why I was going to say Calgary for some reason. Edmonton, Canada. Then we go to the Apex for the final Apex of the year, UFC Vegas 100 on November 9th. Then we go to Madison Square Garden. Then we go to China, have a weekend off. We have a final pay-per-view of the year on December 7th, and then December 14th, Tampa. So that is the schedule for the rest of the year. I am hearing rumors, apparently, that the Apex is returning in January, but we'll have to see. As for new UFC fights, we've only had three since we last spoke. First one, January 11th, which is going to be the first UFC card of the year. No news if it's a fight night or pay-per-view, but a lightweight matchup between Thiago Moises and Trey Ogden. Thiago, 7-6 in the UFC, 18-8 professionally. Biggest win probably over Michael Johnson or Bobby Green. Been kind of average as of late, but he's a guy that always beats the guy that wants to get into the rankings at lightweight. So Thiago Moises, kind of an ultimate gatekeeper, even though he's not that old. Trey Ogden, 18-6 professionally, 3-2 in the UFC. Biggest win probably over Daniel Zaluber. He's a pretty good talent. Wins some, loses some. This is definitely a battle of grapplers and submission artists, so I think it'll come down to who has the better striking, and I honestly might go with Thiago for this matchup. I'm very intrigued to see what goes down there. Here's another one for you. This one for UFC Macau in Macau, China, as Zhao Long takes on Quang Li. And Quang Li, man, you know, he's born in Vietnam, actually trains in Minnesota. Fun fact, very cool. I think I actually know the man we had on, Jimmy Awesome. I mean, I think he's actually trained with him before or something like that, so that's very cool. As for Zhao Long, he's 26-8, make his UFC debut. Absolute killers. This should be a fun one. I gotta go with Quang Li. I gotta do it. Gotta ride with the hometown Minnesota boys. That's how we do it. Dana White's Contender Series this past Tuesday, all five fighters that won got a contract. I believe it was Torrey Spinney got one in his third attempt. Devontae Smith, I don't know if that's his first name. There was some Kyrgyzstan fighter, I think, named Nurgahaze, who got one. Montez, I believe, got one. Someone from Ecuador at featherweight. And I believe Franklin at bantamweight. I honestly can't remember. I wasn't able to catch it this Tuesday as it was my birthday. I'm 22 years old now, and I was celebrating accordingly. So I was unable to catch Dana White's Contender Series, but we'll have to catch next week's. And the final fight that has been officially announced by the UFC, Jim Miller. He's back at lightweight versus Damon Jackson, moving up from featherweight. This one for UFC 309, Madison Square Garden, New York City. Jim Miller, 37-18, 26-17 in the UFC. He held so many records. Biggest wins. I mean, fun fact, this guy holds wins over Don Cerrone and Charles Oliveira, okay? This Jim Miller is an absolute legend. Damon Jackson beat Alex Hernandez and Pat Sabatini. 23-7, 6-5 in the UFC. Damon never really had much success. He's better known for getting KO'd in spectacular fashion. Jim Miller back after losing to Bobby Green, sadly. I'm excited to see it, though. Jim Miller still kicking it, still getting it done. Fun fighters. Lots of good stuff going on in the UFC, but no real new UFC news, sadly. We just have to take what we're given here and there. There is new stuff, though, in the pop culture world. Of course, from Discussing Film, we look at 10 new things in pop culture every single episode, if you will. First off, James Gunn has confirmed that Frank Grillo will appear as Rick Flagg Sr. in Superman, the new movie releasing. Gunn also describes Rick Flagg Sr. as one of the primary characters for Peacemaker Season 2. James Gunn, of course, taking over the DCEU, looking to combat Marvel better. Frank Grillo, amazing actor. He played someone in Captain America 2. I can't remember his name. He played like the villain, if you will, in that film. That one Special Ops Army guy. John Cena kicking butt with Peacemaker Season 2 coming out next year. I'm so excited to watch that. And Rick Flagg Sr. I don't really know too much about who Rick Flagg is. Actually, I do know who Rick Flagg is. He was in the Suicide Squad movie. Actually, he was in both Suicide Squad movies. He was like the commander of the team, I'm pretty sure. So the senior. So it must be his dad. I don't know. We'll have to see. Number two, the first posters for the Kendrick Lamar, the Snoop Dogg, Daft Punk, all in the Lego Pharrell Williams biopic. It is so random. It's just such a random thing that they're doing a Pharrell Williams biopic about his life, but they're doing it in Lego. It's very weird, and they have Kendrick Lamar with a crown of horns on his head in Lego. I don't really like that he does that. It's very weird. It makes me realize that Hollywood is crooked and twisted. No interest in me for that. Number three, Shaq has officially joined Fortnite. That's right, Shaquille O'Neal's made his way into Fortnite. I have not played Fortnite in, I think it might be a year. I think it's been a year since I stopped playing Fortnite. It's just, I outgrew it. I can't believe I actually outgrew it. I never thought I would stop playing Fortnite, but Fortnite's never going to die, and they're just going to keep adding more and more stuff. It's absolutely ridiculous. Number four, Joker 2 has dropped to 48% on Rotten Tomatoes as of today, October 3rd. Currently at 48% with 86 reviews. Oof, that is not very good, is it? The movie comes out tomorrow, Friday, October 4th. Number five, 11 people walked out during an opening screening of Terrifier 3 last night, with one audience member also being sick. Nine of those people walked out during the brutal opening scene. Some killer, serial killer, clown. I no interest in those types of movies. I just find them boring, honestly. That's just how I view it. Number six, The Batman 2 will release in 2 years from today. Oh my goodness, October 3rd, 2026 is when The Batman 2 will come out. I'm going to be 24 years old by then. My goodness. And how old was I when Batman 1 came out? I think I was 19, 18. It's good. Gosh, it came out in 2021, 5 years apart for a different movie. That is just far too long of a gap in between. They haven't even started filming it. I think they start filming in 2025. Unreal. That's just, those are the adverbs I'm always using. Unreal, just ridiculous. That's just how we view it. Number, what are we on? Number six? I think we're on number six right now. I always lose count once we start getting all up into this. Number six, what do we got? The Spider-Noir series has begun filming, starring Nicolas Cage, Brendan Gleeson, Lamorne Morris, Lee Jun-Li, and Jack Huston. Nicolas Cage, man, one of those actors. One of my good buddies, Tyler, he is a huge Nicolas Cage fan, oddly. And Nicolas Cage's Spider-Noir, funny, I'll give you that, it's funny. But I don't know if I'm going to be watching it. That's just me personally. All right. And number seven, how about another Spider-Man thing? Andrew Garfield said that he would love to return if the right project comes along. I love that character and it brings joy. If part of what I bring is joy, then I'm joyful in returning. He used joy one too many times in that statement. But I'm with you, Andrew. I'm with you. I'd love to have you back. Watching Spider-Man No Way Home, that was such a great movie. Such a great movie. And certainly if we could get him back, we could get Tobey Maguire back. I already know they're bringing Tom Holland back. We could get a whole lineup of Spider-Man going to battle, getting it all done. I absolutely love it. Number eight, Steven Spielberg is a PC gamer and loves playing Call of Duty, according to his son. He's like, what are the new shooters? Which Call of Duty should I be playing? Interesting that this grown old man is playing Call of Duty, and I don't even play Call of Duty. I don't remember the last Call of Duty that I played. I honestly, I can't put a name to it. I think I played Cold War or I guess I was playing the Modern Warfare games, but I don't know, I just outgrow. Whenever I play Xbox nowadays, I'm either doing a Madden franchise or I'm doing a UFC fight, and I don't even play that much anymore. Maybe I turn on even, sometimes I just turn on the Xbox, I don't even play it. I think I'm coming to an end of my Xbox, Xboxing days, which is kind of weird to think, because, I mean, I have so many great memories on it, but as for Call of Duty, I have not played in a while. Number 9, what should we bring it home with? It got a lot of interesting things. A first look at Baby Paddington and Paddington 3. I still can't believe they're making more Paddingtons. I just find that absolutely crazy. The first Paddington, great movie. And then apparently there's a Paddington 2. And now I found out they're making a Paddington 3. So, I mean, Paddington's is just going to live on forever. You're never not going to be done getting Paddington movies. But it's pretty good. Good CGI for a little bear. And honestly, it's when I was little, I was always like, oh my gosh, is that bear real? Then I was like, oh, it's all made up. None of it's real. And number 10, how about this one for you? Any actors, any acting fans in here? Daniel Day-Lewis is officially ending his retirement from acting after 7 years. He will be the lead in his son's directorial debut, Anemone, which he co-wrote. The film explores the intricate relationships between fathers, sons, and brothers. How about that? How about that? Isn't that lovely, guys? Don't we just love that? I honestly could care less. I'm sorry, but that's all your new stuff in pop culture. Lots of interesting things going on. I'll tell you something else interesting that has been going on, and that is this whole, whatever you want to call it, with the UFC rankings. The UFC rankings are completely out of whack for some reason. That's according to people, not to me. I mean, I think the UFC rankings are doing fine, but people were complaining that Renato Moicano dominated Benoit Saint-Denis and did not move anywhere in the rankings. So I kind of just wanted to clarify that for a second. Renato Moicano ranked number 11, Benoit Saint-Denis ranked number 12, of course, UFC Paris last weekend. He dominated him, getting round 2 TKO due to doctor stoppage. But I just want to point out is that Renato was ranked 11th. Benoit was ranked 12th. All right. He beat a guy one rung below him. There's nowhere to move above him. Who's above him? Max Holloway, who knocked out Justin Gaethje. Number 9 ranked Rafael Fiziev, who beat Renato Moicano. Number 8 ranked Matheus Gamrot, who should be on a win streak. He beat Dan Hooker, might I add you. Okay. Benil Dariush, you know, he's at 7th. There's no one below him that has beaten him. Okay. The people above him that have beaten him, you've got Armin Tsarukyan and Charles Oliveira. All right, number 1 and number 2 guys, okay? Dan Hooker, he just beat Matheus Gamrot, all right? He's ranked number 5. Michael Chandler at 6. You know, it's questionable how Chandler's still up there. But Moicano saying he should be in the top 6, it doesn't make sense. There's a guy above him who holds a win over him, and he hasn't beaten anyone. Okay, let's honestly look at who he's beaten as of late. Okay, Jalen Turner, good win. Benoit Saint-Denis, good win. Drew Dober, good win. Alexander Hernandez, good win. None of those guys are in the top 10. None of those guys are in the top 10. Jalen Turner's at 14. Benoit Saint-Denis, 12. Dober and Hernandez aren't even ranked. So people getting all mad about that. Just cool your jets. Cool your jets, right? Nothing to really be pointed out there. Other changes that have happened in the rankings, not much. Mozart Evloff passed Brian Ortega to move from 6-5 in the men's featherweight division as he gears up for a fight with the number 9 ranked Aljamain Sterling. That feels like a number 1 contender fight. It really does. And featherweight's in an interesting spot. Of course, Ito Piro takes on Max Holloway October 26th. But you also have Alexander Volkanovski ranked number 1. Him versus number 3 ranked Diego Lopez just feels like the fight you do. It really does. It just feels like you should do it. And Volk's like, nah, I'm going to hold out. I'm going to get my title shot. Alexander Volkanovski is 1-3 in his last 4 fights and has been knocked out in round 1 and 2. I was going to say both in round 1, but I mean, the Islam one was really bad, but that Ito Piro one, oh my goodness, put out to cold, put out sleep. He was put to sleep. It was brutal to watch. And I think him versus Diego Lopez would be the perfect number 1 contender fight at featherweight. But we'll have to see what the UFC likes to go with. Other than that, no real changes. Aline Perez moved from 15-14 with her round 1 submission at UFC Paris. Like I said, she could fight anyone above her at women's bantamweight. Women's bantamweight needs to be saved by Kayla Harrison. Kayla Harrison needs to win this weekend, and she needs to get title shot. And honestly, Julia Pena winning the belt would be so much better than Raquel Pennington retaining. I don't really know, but the rankings, not too many things. They've been moving around. I mean, the committee, kind of controversial with how they rank things, according to people. Islam Makhachev being the number 1 pound-for-pound fighter. I think if Alex Barrow wins, he should be. If he wins this past weekend, which we'll get into that, I think he should be ranked number 1. pound for pound. And it's nothing against Islam. I love Islam Makhachev. Islam Makhachev is one of my favorite fighters. But I just think three title defenses, the odds of him getting a KO if he wins is very high. You know, he knocked out Jamahal Hill in 3 minutes. Knocked out Jiří Procházka 13 seconds into round two. It speaks for itself. It speaks for itself. Alex Pereira, he's ranked number two in the men's pound for pound. If he wins, he should go to number one. But if Khalil wins, imagine that, the huge upset. I was actually thinking when I look at the rankings in terms of the featherweight division, the flyweight division, I should say, the 125ers, is that I don't know who Alexander Pantoja should fight next in terms of championship. Because, I mean, he holds wins over the number one, number two guys. Everyone else below him just is nowhere near of a title shot. And, you know, you have Moreno and Albazi fighting. You have Royval and Tyra fighting. The winner of those will probably be in positions to get title shots. But I think you give Kai Kara-France a title shot here. Just knocked out Steve Ersig, a guy who took Pantoja five rounds hard. I think that Kai Kara-France coming off that round one knockout will be a perfect challenge for Pantoja if you want to get him a fight in January, February, maybe even December if they can squeeze that in. But other than that, flyweight doesn't have too many more hitters. You know, Alex Perez should be fighting down. Same with Nikalu. But I really like that. I was kind of thinking the other day, who could I have Pantoja fight? And I think Kai Kara-France would be the perfect option. Rankings-wise, nothing too much to really look at. You got a lot of ranked fighters fighting this weekend, so we'll be getting into all of that later on. Exciting stuff, though. So if anyone's wondering, Renato Moicano is ranked exactly where he needs to be. There is no controversy. There is no controversy. I hate to say when there's no controversy because people love controversy. They feed off of controversy. There's nothing you guys need to be stressing about, worrying about. It's Renato Moicano ranked perfectly where he needs to be. So that's your UFC rankings. We'll talk about a little bit later on other stuff that's going on. But something else I did want to touch on, which I just find super fascinating, is when I look at the top fantasy scores. I've been doing this because I'm going to do it this year. Is I'm going to go week by week, look at the top 10 per position in fantasy football. If no one knows, we did drop our NFL week 5 predictions on the second part of episode 126 with my three special guests. So go check that out for all my official predictions. They're not as good as making picks live on the podcast. You know, I ask them, who do you think is going to win? They just say a team, no reasoning. So that's one of the main issues why I think for future episodes, when I do my predictions for weeks, NFL weeks with people, they'll be more intricate to opening up. But in terms of the top 10 fantasy players per position, we're 4 weeks in, we're going into week 5. I just kind of wanted to touch on who the top people were in each position. So we'll start with quarterback here. And the number one fantasy quarterback as of right now is the Commanders rookie Jaden Daniels having a breakout season. I saw that the NFL Network released something that he is number one runner, front runner, 4 weeks in for MVP. Absolutely ridiculous. Lamar Jackson at 2 is expected. Baker Mayfield at 3 has been such a surprise this year. He's been playing amazing football with the Buccaneers. Love seeing what he's doing. Josh Allen at 4, no surprise. Sam Darnold at 5. I mean, it's just absolutely crazy. 4 weeks in, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, and Jaden Daniels are in your top 5 fantasy quarterbacks. Incredible. I don't think Sam Darnold slows down at all when we go to London. I'm excited for it. Justin Fields with his big week 4 performance. He's at 6. Dak at 7 expected. Geno always floats around 8. Jalen Hurts at 9. People like myself, I expect more of Jalen. Certainly there is something off with this Eagles team this year. They'll have to get some corrections going. Injuries have kind of hurt them. But Jalen Hurts at 9 and Kyler Murray at 10. Honestly, returning after a year off, comes 4 weeks in at the number 10 spot. Not too bad. Cardinals sitting kind of pretty too. Getting into running backs, Alvin Kamara at 1. I will say that's a surprise. I know Alvin Kamara is good, but the fact that everyone kind of sleeps on him, you know, it was all Christian McCaffrey, Bijan Robinson, Breece Hall. None of those guys are even in the top 10. McCaffrey might not even play this year. Kamara's been a breakout stud. Saquon at 2. I mean, come on. He is the Eagles centerpiece. He is the Eagles offense as of right now. Derrick Henry at 3 with his age, with his tenure, and he's dropping 35 fantasy points on Sunday Night Football. Oh my goodness, he has been such a surprise this year. Kyren Williams at 4 is expected. Jordan Mason, breakout rookie talent of the year with this 49ers team. It seems almost unfair that Christian McCaffrey's out and they have such a stud in Jordan Mason. Number 6, Jonathan Taylor. You know, I expect that. Aaron Jones at 7, a bit of a surprise. I know Aaron Jones is good, but people were thinking we were going to get a lesser version of him with the Vikings. No, sir. He has been the exact talent that we expect of him. Number 8 and 9, you got Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, the best running back, the best backfield, that's it, the best backfield in the NFL is Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. No other two running backs are consistently putting up double digits every single week. I know you can point to, oh, Rashad White, Bucky Irving, oh, Derrick Henry, Justice Hill. No, David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs score multiple touchdowns every game. They are so talented. And number 10, Devin Achane from the Dolphins. He's kind of taken a dip since the season began. This is due to the fact that the Dolphins look completely lost. They have no quarterback. Somehow Tua goes out and they're left with Mason Rudolph, Tyler Huntley. They look like lost puppies out there. Skylar Thompson, they need a quarterback. And I don't know, there may be rumblings that Tom Brady may be returning to Miami. That could be completely false. I honestly think that might be false. We'll have to see. Speaking of rookies, we get into our wide receivers. Number 1, Malik Nabers. Look, I mean, this should have been predictable, being as when we look at this Giants team, there's no one to give the ball to except for your young stud rookie. Malik Nabers has had an exceptional year. He does have a concussion right now, so I believe he will be out week 5, which means he will lose his number 1 position, but we wish him a speed recovery because dude is so talented. I would love to watch him for years to come. Number 2, Nico Collins. Tank Dell's out. You know, even though you got Stephon Diggs, it has just been the Nico Collins show. Multiple 30-point games. CJ Stroud, favorite target so far. It's been nice watching him play. Number 3, my boy Justin Jefferson. Any Minnesota fans, that's our guy. That's our boy, okay? And see that he's at 3 with Sam Darnold throwing to him. It just lets you know that the culture here in Minnesota, the program we have, truly works for people that embrace it. Sam Darnold's embraced it. Justin Jefferson, we've known he's been embracing it. Look, he could be number 1 by the end of the season. Number 4, Jaden Reed. He's came out as the best wide receiver, one of the best players, if not the best player, on that rival Packers team, Green Bay Packers. And look, you know, Dontavian Wicks has big games. Romeo Dobbs will probably have some big games, even Tucker Kraft, who knows. But I just know, for one, that Jaden Reed is Jordan Love's favorite target, and he's doing good. Number 4, wide receiver, fancy-wise, in the league. Number 5, Chris Godwin. Pretty crazy that this season, Chris Godwin's outpacing Mike Evans. Last season, it was the opposite. Mike Evans outpacing Chris Godwin. Baker just has the connection with Godwin this year, and it might be because Mike Evans is facing so much tough coverage. Number 6, Juwan Jennings. This is only because, all right, Debo is out, and he had that 46.5 3-touchdown game. That's the only reason. He's going to take a dip. He's going to fall off, but he's at 6 right now. DK Metcalf at 7, another concerning one, especially for fantasy owners, with how many touches Jackson Smith and Jigba was getting, which I love. You know, Jackson Smith and Jigba is one of my favorite players, wide receiver-wise, on my fantasy teams. And even Tyler Lockett, he steals some catches occasionally. I mean, even Bobo was catching one. The touchdowns were going to the tight ends on that Monday Night Football game. DK, still a killer, still a savage, but do be aware, fantasy owners, he may take a dip off, but number 7 right now. Monron St. Brown at 8. He's working his way back up. He's getting good games, right? Jared Goff is finally finding the connections to him. I'm excited to see where this goes from here. Number 9, Stephon Diggs. I mean, come on. Stephon Diggs and Nico Collins both on here. CJ Stroud, so many weapons. Number 10, Ja'Marr Chase. Love to see that. Joe Burrow and him finally finding a connection. He thinks very highly of himself. I'll say about that. But Ja'Marr Chase, number 10 fantasy wide receiver 4 weeks in. Heading to tight end, this is surprising. Number 1, Dallas Goedert. Dallas Goedert, I don't know if the Eagles' offensive line is failing or something, but Goddard just keeps getting open, and it's always these little short passes, and he gets the first downs, and it's been working. All right, Dallas Goedert, known he's been good, but the fact he's number 1 4 weeks in, incredible to see. Number 2, George Kittle. As expected, Kittle, self-proclaimed best tight end in the league. He's definitely top 3. Number 3, Brock Bowers, rookie. The rookies are taking over this year. Where else are you going to see, besides running back? Actually, running back, you got Jordan Mason at 5. QB and wide receiver, Malik Nabers, Jaden Daniels, they're number 1. How about number 3, tight end, Brock Bowers? The rookies are taking over. And with how this Raiders team is looking right now, they're getting in rougher and rougher shape. Brock Bowers is definitely going to be the top option once Devontae Adams leaves. Number 4, Cole Kmet. It's just, he always fits in right there. I actually just traded Cole Kmet for Zay Flowers, you know, because Cole Kmet has that one big 25-point game, moves so high up, everyone's like, oh, I got to have him, got to have him. And then he's just kind of average all year. Drops 20-point games occasionally, but Caleb Williams is still working out who his favorite target is. Is it DJ Moore? Is it Keenan Allen? Is it Romo Odunze? Is it Cole Kmet? We'll have to see. Number 5, Pat Freiermuth. Reliable as always with this Steelers team. You know, Justin Fields loves his tight ends. Number 6, Isaiah Likely. I find it crazy. Isaiah Likely is technically TE2 on that Ravens team. Sadly, Mark Andrews has fallen into backup territory. Isaiah Likely, big first week since then, kind of mediocre. Number 7, Trey McBride, was touted really highly this season. He's only at 7, but do not panic, fantasy owners. I do think Trey McBride will come around. Kyler Murray is still readjusting back to the league. He's got a whole new team. He's been working with it, but Trey McBride playing good. Dalton Kincaid at 8 had a really big Sunday night football game, despite the team performing awful. Dawson Knox is slowly falling back. All right, he's kind of already. Dalton Kincaid, second year, looking incredible. Zach Ertz at 9 had himself almost a 10-point performance with this Commanders team. Jane Daniels, he'll find all of his targets out there. Zach Ertz still kicking it. And number 10, Jake Ferguson. This Cowboys team is in rough shape. Jake Ferguson sadly should be a top option, but I mean, he's just, there's nothing to do. There's just something off of this Cowboys team. I can't place it. Maybe it's because they don't have a running back and the defense is just giving up so many points. Speaking of defenses, you got the Vikings, your number one defense in the league. No surprise, they're killers. Broncos at 2 fantasy wise, very, very surprising, but they have been holding their opponents, despite being 2-2, they hold their opponents to a very low they don't give up many points for it. That's what I was going for. Number 3, the Bears. Number 4, the Packers. You got to be freaking kidding me, guys. Of the top 4 defenses in fantasy 4 weeks in, 3 are in the NFC North. That should tell you something. Bears, great defense. Packers, good defense. And I mean, both of those defenses, and even the Vikings, all 3 of our defenses, they always give up a lot of points, and then they'll always find fire. Like, think about the Packers. They give up 28 points in the first half, 4 touchdowns. They only hold us to a field goal in the second half. That's usually how it goes. Vikings defense, same thing. We only hold the Packers to a touchdown with under a minute left, and then we give up, what did we give up, like 3 more in the fourth quarter? Ridiculous. Number 5, 49ers. I think a lot of people would think that should be a bit higher. They have a lot of heavy hitters. Chargers at 6. Harbaugh has just completely restated this defense. Chargers looking good. Steelers at 7 is expected. Jets at 8 is expected. Bills at 9 and Saints at 10. They don't really feel surprising. Some defenses don't really feel surprising. It is nice to see that Saints have been playing great football. They do have a tough matchup with the Chiefs coming up. And as for the Bills, I mean, Bills are the biggest hit or miss team I've ever seen. They beat lower level teams. They lose to high level teams. They play to the level of their opponent. And if they can't, then they completely fade away. Kicker wise, we'll wrap this one up. Brandon Aubrey at 1, best kicker in the league. It isn't even close. Number 2, Chris Boswell from the Steelers. Big week 1, yet to do much since. Jake Moody at 3 from the 49ers. Consistent. He's been earning more points. Evan McPherson with the Bengals. Besides Jamar Chase, Evan McPherson, the kicker, has been one of the more notable things from this Bengals team this season. Number 5, Cammy Fairbairn. A lot of opportunities with the Texans this season. CJ Stroud's always getting into scoring range of some regard. He's been performing great. Number 6, Blake Grubb from the Saints. Saints, like I said, one of the best offenses in the league. He's always getting scoring opportunities. Austin Siebert with the Commanders at 7, having himself a good year, and he continues to consistently put up big points. We'll have to see if that continues. Number 8, Young Hukou, fresh off his 50-yard game-winning kick. That's right, Falcons love Young Hukou. Number 9, Nick Folk. Recently got on this list after scoring all the points for the Titans, except for one rushing touchdown from Tajay Spears. Actually, I think Tony Pollard might punch one in too, but he had 26 fantasy points or something. It was ridiculous. And at number 10, Will Lutz. Actually, is Will Lutz on the... Is Blake... No, I think Blake Grubb is on the Saints. Will Lutz, can't remember where you're from. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Will. It sucks. But 4 weeks in, I just find this all very fascinating to see where all these players are shaping up to be put. Good stuff, man. All right, we'll keep it moving. We'll keep it going. But we'll be back week 5. This is going to be a consistent thing where on our Wednesday episodes or Thursday episodes, whenever we record these, we will look at who the top fantasy players are. So far for fantasy, because with fantasy football, it's tough. I don't really like to talk about my team personally, because I know for a fact no one actually cares about your own team. All right, no one cares about someone else's team. They only care about their team. So you always have to be aware when you're talking about those things. You can talk about players and how well they're performing, but at the end of the day, mention something about your fantasy team to someone else, their response is going to be, oh, nice, yeah, my team. That's exactly how every conversation is going to go. But let's get into the main course and the dessert for today's episode. That is our UFC 307 predictions. I am just so pumped for this. I'm just so pumped for this. I'm excited to get into this. And this is one of the better pay-per-views. I feel like it just came together out of nowhere. We are in Utah at the Delta Center, Salt Lake City. It's going to be an absolutely phenomenal event. Main card is looking stacked as always. This is one of the rare occasions where we, of course, always have 10 fighters on a pay-per-view main card, and all 10 are ranked. Okay, and we get into our final two prelims of the evening. They're all ranked. You have so many ranked fighters on this card. By the way, there's 12 fights. That means there's 24 fighters, okay? 13 ranked fighters. We absolutely love that. We'll absolutely take it. Let's get into it. We have 7 prelims, 5 main card fights, and 2 title fights. We got the locks right now for you. Let's do this. Kicking off the evening, we head to the men's welterweight division for our first prelim of the evening, ladies and gentlemen, and it is Court McGee taking on Tim Means. We got two veterans in the welterweight division kicking us off, and we do have a hometown boy. Court McGee is from Utah. McGee, nicknamed the Crusher, 22-13 professionally. Tim Dirty Bird Means, 33-16. These two are very, very seasoned. 6'2" to 5'11" gives Tim Means 3 inches in height. Both men have a 75-inch reach and stand in the orthodox fighting position. Tim Means, the 40-year-old from New Mexico, is the favorite at -230. You got Court McGee coming in here at +190. Tim Means, of his 33 victories in his career, 20 by knockout, 5 by submission. Of his 16 losses, he's been KO'd 3 times and submitted 7 times. So not a lot of his fights go the distance. Hasn't gotten a win since September of 2023, so it's been over a year. He had one fight in April of this year, got knocked out in 2 minutes by Uros Medic, but Uros Medic is a killer. Unfortunately, Tim is 1-3 in his last 4 losses to Kevin Holland, Max Griffin, Alex Morono. So he's been fighting some killers. In 2020 and 2021, he was on a little 3-fight win streak at one point. Wins over Nicholas Dalby and Mike Perry. I mean, dude's been around since 2015 in the UFC. He's fought in Matt Brown, fought in Alex Oliveira, fought in Bilal Muhammad, fought in Nico Price, Daniel Rodriguez. Tim Means been around the block a minute. Also, the oldest fighter on today's card at 40 years old. And his opponent, Court McGee, right there behind him. Like I said, 39 years old, the +190 underdog, is from Utah. So, you know, we always like to root for the hometown boy. So we might be going with Court McGee here. You know, Court, of his 22 career victories, 3 KOs and 7 subs. So he kind of is a decision machine. Of his 13 losses, he's been KO'd 3 times. Unfortunately, of those 3 times, they've actually been in 2 of his last 3 losses, unfortunately. And this, he's been fighting since 2007, just to give you a perspective of how long Court McGee has been at this. I'm pretty sure the same year Tim Means began fighting. McGee, been with the UFC since 2010, never really fought anyone of notoriety. Oh, scratch that. Court McGee holds win over Robert Whittaker back in 2013. Oh my gosh, what a person to say you've beaten Robert Whittaker. He is on a 3-fight losing streak. He's 2-6 in his last 8 fights. Since 2022, he's gone 0-3. Last win was in January of 2022. So there you have it. Last fought Alex Morono in 2024, or April of this year. Lost the unanimous decision. Before that, he'd been knocked down round 1 by Matt Brown and Jeremiah Wells. This one's tricky. I kind of do want to go with Court McGee just because he's from Utah. He's the hometown guy. But there's just been little to love with Court McGee as I've been watching his last few fights. He outstruck Alex Morono 60-38 last time they fought, even landed a takedown, but he just did nothing in the fight. So, I mean, it was hard to really tell. We're going to go with Tim Means here just simply because this is a toss-up. I wanted to go with Court McGee since he's the hometown. Actually, maybe we should go with Court McGee. Now that I'm thinking about it, you know, this could be Court McGee's final fight. He's in Utah. He just lost to Alex Morono, a man who, you know, Tim Means got submitted by him. Just want to go out there and say that. We're actually going to go with Court McGee. We're going with the underdog. You know, I wasn't going to do it, but he's from Utah. I got to go with the hometown guy. It's just, there's just something about picking the hometown guy that always gets me going. So Court McGee, will predict him to beat Tim Means. Got to be a decision. Got to be a decision. I don't even know if Court McGee knows how to finish someone. Honestly, I don't even know. I'm so sorry for his poor wife. You know, we're not going to go. I was going to say sorry for his poor wife because he can't get a finish. But I mean, it has been the last, oh gosh, I don't even know if he has a finish in the UFC. I'm going to be honest. I'm looking at his run in the UFC. His last finish in the UFC was in 2010. Oh my goodness, Court. I probably should not be picking you, but then again, this is the first prelim of the night. Oh, by the way, everyone, 231 and 156 on the year. We've been having some very close fight nights where we've been kind of, you know, going breaking even on predictions, but still up all time on the year. What are we, 75 plus 75 units on the year. I consider that pretty good. Getting into our next one, another interesting fight. Almost all these fights are very interesting, if you ask me. And this one will actually be the final time we see a former champion fight in the UFC. How about this? That's right. Carla Esparza, the former women's strawweight champion, Carla Cookie Monster Esparza, takes on Tisha Pennington. Tiny Tornado Pennington. Tisha Pennington, her wife, that's right, her married spouse, is actually fighting in the co-main event. Your current women's bantamweight champion, Hakwael Pennington. Are either of these women ranked? Probably not. They have not been at it for a long time. They haven't gotten a win in a long time, I'll say that. Carla Esparza and Tisha Pennington. But Carla, 20-7. Tisha, 13-7. Both women are 5-1. 63-inch reach advantage to 60 inches in favor of Carla Esparza. Both women fight in the orthodox fighting position. Carla Esparza, your plus 150 underdog. Tisha Pennington is the minus 180 favorite for this match. Let's start with the former champion, Carla Esparza. She kind of took a little bit of a hiatus, you know. She last lost to Zhang Weili in 2022, and that was pretty embarrassing. Okay, kind of got dog-walked in that matchup. And before that, you know, she had beaten Rose Namajunas and Yan Chionin. She had been on an incredible run. It was a 6-fight win streak, which led her to winning the belt. But her versus Rose Namajunas is regarded as one of the worst fights in the I think it is the worst fight in UFC history, but, I mean, the 36-year-old from California, of her 20 wins, 3 KOs and 5 subs, so, you know, not too many. Of her 7 losses, she's been KO'd twice and subbed twice, and this is her retirement fight. She said, after this, I'm hanging up. And what a career, man. A decade in the UFC, she won the Ultimate Fighter in her second UFC appearance, fought for the belt against Joanna Jędrzejczyk, you know, went on a crazy win-loss here. I mean, fighting Randa Markos, Marina Moroes, Claudia Goodell, Tatiana Suarez. Finally, beat Vera Jandroba, beat Alexa Grasso, beat Michelle Carson Gomez, Maria Rodriguez, like I said, Yan Chionin and Rose Namajunas. A great career for Carla Esparza. Way to cap it off. I believe she had a child, actually, within the last 2 years. So we're happy to have you back, Carla. The only issue is it has been almost 2 years since you last fought. And her opponent, Tisha Pennington, been a bit more active, I'll say that. Minus 180 favorite, 35 years old, from Florida. Now, this is absolutely insane to me. 13 career victories, 20 career MMA fights for her. 1 KO and 1 submission. Never been finished. 1 KO and 1 submission. That is right. 18 of her 20 professional bouts have went to a decision. So you best bet this fight's going to a decision. There's absolutely no way. You gotta be kidding me. That is just ridiculously boring. And Tisha, I mean, she's bounced around the women's division for a while now. For a while now, if you will. I do think it's fascinating that she's married to Hakwael Pennington. What other sport, what other event will you have a married couple? Actually, what MMA organization, what anything, are you going to have two people that are spouses fighting on the same card? That's a rare thing in the UFC. I'll say that. I actually think I've seen that before, boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, but there's just something about when your wife's the champion. But yeah, Tisha Pennington. Nothing's really low, and I know she did fight earlier this year. I believe it was actually at UFC 302, the Islam Makhachev card, if I'm thinking about this correctly. Let me just whip this up on my phone. You know, I could edit this. I could just say that I'm going over this, but I just can't. But my Wi-Fi here is so good sometimes, and other times it's just absolutely terrible. But yeah, Tisha Pennington, it was actually in May. She fought Tabitha Ritchie, lost a split decision. Before that, fought in April of 2022, lost to Mackenzie Dern by split decision. So she hasn't gotten a win since August of 2021. Yikes, been a minute since Tisha Pennington last got a victory. Been with the UFC since 2014. No, she actually does have one of her two finishes in the UFC, 2017. Got a performance of the night, rear naked chokehold. So there you have it. At one point, was on a 4-fight losing streak. Was on a 3-fight winning streak. She's now on a 2-fight losing streak. Little to be desired from Tisha Pennington, if I'm being honest here. I probably should go with her, being that she took Tabitha Ritchie to a close decision. And actually, same thing with Mackenzie Dern. She might be better, but you know what? Carla Esparza, it's her retirement fight. We're going to go Carla Esparza by unanimous decision. That's right. The first two fights of the night, we're going with the underdog. There's just something spicy about that, something fun that I certainly enjoy. But yeah, that's all we got there. I don't really think you guys should expect too much from this. If anything, maybe a Carla Esparza submission. Maybe. That's a reach. I think that's a heavy reach, but hey, I always hope for it. I always give him the benefit of the doubt. After that, we head to the men's light heavyweight division as Ryan Superman Spann takes on Ovince St. Preux. Absolutely love this one. Ryan Spann, -340 favorite OSP. Ovince St. Preux, +265 underdog. Ryan Superman Spann, 21-10. OSP, 27-17. 6'5 to 6'3 gives Ryan Spann 2 inches in height, but OSP has the reach, 80 inches to 79. Southpaw with that left hand for Ovince. Orthodox for Ryan Spann with that right hand coming right on at you. Let's kick it off with the OSP here, man. The underdog, 41 years old. He has been fighting a long, long time. Born in Haiti, now lives in Tennessee. Actually went to the University of Tennessee. Fun fact, if you like facts. 27 victories in his career. 11 by knockout, 9 by sub. So 20 of 27 of his career victories by finish. We like to see that. Of his 17 professional losses, 5 KOs and 3 subs. And these two are actually supposed to fight September 7th. But I think OSP had to pull out. But thankfully, we get this fight now. Ovince St. Preux, second time in the octagon this year. Fought in March. Won a split decision over Kennedy and Chukani. Before that, he had lost to Felipe Lins in February of 2023. I mean, he's been around since 2010 in the UFC. This dude's been fighting a long, long time. He's fought in Ryan Bader, Shogun Rua. He fought John Jones for the belt. He's fought in Glover Teixeira, Jimmy Manua, Volkan Ozdemir, Marcos Rogério de Lima, Corey Anderson. Actually, his knockout, head kick knockout of Corey Anderson, one of the best knockouts that I've seen. He's fought in Dominic Reyes, Nikita Krylov. I mean, this dude is an absolute killer, but you know, 2-1 in his last three isn't too bad. He's averaging just about one fight per year. This is actually the first year since 2020 he's had more than one fight in a year. We're happy to have you, Ovince St. Preux. You're a fun fighter, but it ain't no easy going. Ain't no easy going. And the Ryan Spann is someone who he's been into the top 10, you know, but never been really big, never been able to break through since then. Okay, he's been, it's fair to say, embarrassing so far in the UFC. And, you know, Ryan Spann, 33 years old, from Texas, the -340 favorite for a reason. Of his 21 career victories, he's got, where'd I have it, 6 KOs and 12 subs, so 18 of 21 wins by finish, pretty impressive. Now we get to the 10 losses, 4 KOs and 3 submissions. So 7 of his 10 losses, he's been finished. He just rarely goes to a decision. He rarely goes to a decision in any of his matchups here. Been with the UFC since 2017, fought on Dana White's Contender Series twice, lost in 15 seconds, and won in 26 seconds. So Ryan Spann, a lot of round one finishes. In fact, since 2020, he's only had 2 fights that have gone past round one, whether win or lose. Some of those, he's been knocked out by Johnny Walker in round one, knocked out Misha Serkinov, been submitted by Anthony Smith, submitted Ian Kulaba, knocked out Dominic Reyes, got submitted by Nikita Krylov. August of last year, split decision lost Anthony Smith, fought earlier this year in April, and got knocked out by Bogdan Guskov in round number one. I don't think that deters Ryan Spann at all. I'm going to be riding with him to beat Ovince St. Preux. In fact, we're even going to go with a little round one knockout. That's right, round one knockout for Ryan Superman Spann. I should actually probably be putting this live on Verdict now that I think about it, because sometimes I forget to put my Verdict picks in, and it just completely jacks everything up. So you already know, Carla Esparza by unanimous decision. We're actually going to go Court McGee by unanimous decision. And we are going to give Ryan Spann that round one knockout. I already had that locked in. Should be exciting. Hopefully Ryan Spann will get back into the rankings. He's a fun fighter. After that, we head to the men's middleweight division. And this should be a striker's delight as Ior Portera takes on Cesar Almeida. This one, This one should be fun. I would be very surprised if we didn't get a knockout here. This is one of the few fights where it's like, okay, we're guaranteed a knockout, right? But who knows? Cesar Almeida, Cezinha, 5-1 professionally. Ayor Doulas Potera, 20-6. 6'3" to 6'1" gives Potera 2 inches in height. He also has 1 inch in reach, 75 inches to 74. Southpaw stands for Potera, Orthodox for Cesar Almeida. Cesar Almeida, good guy, I suppose. I don't really know. Ayor Potera, let's start off with him. I mean, dude's been with the UFC since 2021. He's been hit or miss. He's been hit or miss as they come. The 28-year-old is from Ukraine. He's from Kyiv. Was it Kyiv? I believe it is. But plus 310 underdog. Yikes. Of his 20 career victories, he's coming at you with 9 KOs and 7 submissions. Of his 6 losses, 4 KOs, 1 sub. So, I mean, when he loses, he loses. He was actually supposed to fight Shara Magomedov, the undefeated one-eyed Russian, in June, but that fight fell apart for some reason. Ayor Potera, he's 2-4 in the UFC. All but one of his fights have gone to a decision. Holy cow. More often than not, he's getting knocked out. Most recently, he was submitted in May in 54 seconds by Michelle Pereira, but Michelle Pereira is on the run of a lifetime. Last win was in February, beat Robert Pasek by unanimous decision. Potera, interesting fighter. I don't expect too much out of him. He actually retired Shogun Hua in 2023, which is funny. But, I mean, some of the guys that have knocked him out, Rodolfo Bellotto, Carlos Huber, Nicolau Negomarano, they hit damn hard, okay? They hit damn hard, so let's give him the benefit of the doubt. His opponent, 8 years his senior, Cesar Almeida, the -400 favorite, 36 years old, from Brazil, 5-1 professionally, 4 KOs of those 5 victories. And, you know, he actually holds a win over Alex Pereira in kickboxing back in 2013. So Cesar Almeida, don't let his 5-1 record fool you. He is much more of a striker, if you will. He's much more of a, or what am I trying to say? Don't let his MMA record fool you. He has been experienced in the kickboxing realm far more than he was in the UFC, or MMA in general. Cesar, 1-1 in the UFC, holds a TKO of Dylan Budka, fought in June, got out-grappled by Roman Kopilov, which was, you know, we were clearly seeing that grappling is his weakness. Roman actually dropped him as well. So I'll be curious to see who really comes out here and lands the big punches, gets it done quickly. Because Cesar Almeida, I know he has the power, I know he has the abilities, but if Potero wants to lean on the grappling, which we haven't seen, you know, this dude does not shoot takedowns, I don't know. But I think if we get into a little striking contest, I want to go with Potera for some reason, but I don't know if that's wise, because I've seen in striking battles he's lost. Almeida hasn't really been in a striking battle. You know, when he touches you, you feel it, all right? His punches are super hard. So, I mean, he's a -400 favorite. Yeah, we're going to go with Cesar Almeida. We're going to trust the oddsmakers, know what they're saying. And Potera, I mean, just, it's been icky. He has a bad chin. I'll give you that. He has a very bad chin. Every time he's getting punched, he's getting rocked way unnecessarily more than he should. So, that's who we're riding with to continue the prelims. After that, we're dropping down to the men's lightweight division. An interesting one here is Austin Thud Hubbard, takes on Alexander the Great Ape Hernandez. Austin Hubbard, 17-7. Alexander Hernandez, 14-8. 5'10 to 5'9 gives Hubbard 1 inch in height. 1 inch in reach goes to Alexander Hernandez, 72 to 71. Both men stand in the orthodox fighting position. Alexander Hernandez, one of the biggest fall-offs in UFC history. One of the biggest, you know, you see those clips on YouTube or those compilations where it's like cocky MMA fighters getting humbled. You're going to see Alexander in almost all of those clips or whatever you want to call it. Hernandez, 32 years old now. He's from San Antonio. Of his 14 career victories, he has 6 KOs and 2 subs. Of his 8 career losses, 3 KOs and 1 sub. All the rest are by decision. Hernandez, been with the UFC since 2018, came in and was on a credible run. Knocked out Benil Dariush in shocking fashion in 42 seconds in his debut. After that, beat Oliver Abian Mercier. And then ran into Donald Cowboy Cerrone, who humbled his butt. Okay, humbled his ass. It was immaculate. Knocked him out with a head kick. It was beautiful. Since then, he's pretty much been win-loss. You know, he'll beat a guy, Chris Gutzemacher, lose to Drew Dober. Beat Mike Breeden, lose to Thiago Moises. Beat a Jim Miller, great win, lose to Billy Quarantillo, lose to Namoikano. As of right now, 2-fight losing streak. Fought in April, lost to Damon Jackson by split decision. I did not have him losing that. But at the same time, when you don't do enough, There's nothing I can do to help you with that. So, I mean, he's 1-4 in his last five. It has been less than ideal. Less than ideal if you're an Alexander Hernandez fan, which I don't really know anyone who is. But he's in EA Sports UFC 5. You know who's not in EA Sports UFC 5? His opponent. That is Austin Hubbard. Austin Hubbard coming in here. 32 years old. Also from Denver. 4 KOs and 3 submissions make up his 17 wins, so he is a decision machine. Of his 7 career losses, he's been submitted 3 times. Runner-up on, not this past Ultimate Fighter, but the Ultimate Fighter before that, he was the runner-up, which, I mean, nothing too impressive there to say you're the runner-up. But, hey, we've seen some good runner-ups in UFC, Ultimate Fighter history. Been with the UFC since 2019, actually got cut in 2021, after going 3-4 with just no excitement. And then, you know, he's come back, lost to Curt Hallbaugh, but picked up a win over Michael Fieglak in 2024 in April. April this year, won a decision. Hubbard is just boring as they come. There's just nothing exciting, really, about this matchup for me. Neither guy has been on a hot streak. Neither guy has been doing anything remotely interesting. At the end of the day, it just comes down to who do I want to pick? I mean, with the altitude in Utah, Denver might be more accommodating to Austin Hubbard, but Alexander Hernandez, he might have some success. I kind of doubt it. Hernandez has never lost more than 2 matchups in a row in his career. Meanwhile, Hubbard has not won more than 2 matchups in a row since 2018, before he was even in the UFC. So we're probably going to go with Alexander Hernandez for this one. Going to go with a decision win here. I do not expect much. I do not expect much for this one. I hate to be a prick, but there's just little to be desired with both of these men. So we'll go with Hernandez. I mean, I can honestly care less, too. I could honestly really care less. So definitely a decision. Definitely see that being the case. So that's what we have there. With that, we get to our second to last prelim, and we finally get a little ranked action coming as we head to the women's strawweight division as the numbers 6. Wow, Marina Rodriguez already up to 6. Number 6 ranked Marina Rodriguez takes on the number 14th ranked Yasmin Lucindo. How about an excellent opportunity for Yasmin Lucindo to skyrocket up the rankings? It won't be easy. It won't be easy for her because she takes on Marina Rodriguez, one of my favorite women fighters, one of my favorite female fighters on the roster. Let's get into it. Nothing is working. All right. I want everyone to know that right now as I record this. I'm very out in the open with all my technical difficulties. Nothing's loading anywhere, but we're still powering through. Women's strawweight, Marina Rodriguez, Yasmin Lucindo. Marina 17-4-2, Yasmin 16-5. 5'6 to 5'3 gives Marina a notable 3 inches in height, but it's actually Yasmin Lucindo, 66 to 65, who has the reach advantage. Both women fight in the orthodox fighting position. Yasmin Lucindo, born in the same year as me, 2002, which means she's also 22 years old. Well, guess what, Yasmin? We are the same age. How about that? Marina, she is the senior, though. She's been fighting longer. 37 years old. Wow, plus 145. Underdog here. Yasmin is the favorite at minus 175. From Brazil, of her 17 wins, 7 KOs and 1 sub. Of her 4 losses, she's only ever been KO'd once. Only ever finished once. Very impressive. Marina, been with the UFC since 2018. Won on Dana White's Contender Series Brazil. How about that? Multiple draws to start our career. Her only losses, Carla Sparza, former champion, Amanda Lemos, former title challenger, Virna Jandiroba, fighting for the chance to fight for a belt, and most recently, Jessica Andrade, UFC 300, split decision, former champion. Last win was in September 2023, where she had a brutal round 2 TKO of Michelle Warson Gomez. She may be 1-3 in her last 4, but don't let that fool you. Marina Rodriguez is so talented. She was once on a 4-fight win streak, and I truly believe she should have gotten a title shot. I mean, she knocked down Amanda Ribas, had a fight night win over Michelle Warson Gomez, had a fight of the night win over Mackenzie Dern, and then beat Yan Cheonan. I mean, she's so super talented. Speaks for herself. I'm a Marina Rodriguez fan. Her opponent, Yasmin Lucindo. You know, I do sympathize with her. Young, up-and-coming fighter. And by the way, 22 years old. She has 21 pro MMA fights. So she will have as many fights as her age after she fights this upcoming Saturday. 22 years young, from Brazil as well. 8 KOs and 3 subs of her 16 victories. Now, of her 5 losses, she's been KO'd 3 times, including, not so far in her UFC career. She had a great fight, actually. I remember that fight against Yasmin Jaraguai in August of 2022. One of the best female fights I've ever seen. Very talented. After that, beat Brogan Walker. That was in 2023. Submitted Poliana Vian, 2023. Fought in May of this year and beat Carolina Kowalski. Good for her. This one's simple for me. I'm going Marina Rodriguez. I just think the talent that she possesses is title shot worthy. Yasmin Lucindo, she's young. She's 22. We're pushing her way too high up the rankings right now. We'll see what she can do. If she wins, she'd be ranked number 6 in the world, which would be absolutely crazy to me. But yeah, I'm probably going to go with a little round 3 TKO. I think she breaks her down. And I mean, she's lost of her 5 career losses, 3 by, oh, not KO, submission. So this will be the first time she gets KO'd. That's how I see it going. But that's me coming at you as a Marina Rodriguez fan. So that's how we view it. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we get into our final prelim of the night. And I kid you not, this is the prelim. This is your featured prelim. That's right. The names I'm about to tell you, I am not stuttering on, okay, because you have the number 9 ranked former title challenger, Wonder Boy Stephen Thompson, as he takes on the number 11th ranked Joaquin Buckley. That's how stacked this main card is. That's right. Wonder Boy Thompson on the prelims, and both of these guys are saying, we're going to prove to the UFC that we should have been on the main card. Personally, I could care less. I could care less if they're on the main card or not. That's just me. That's just me, but Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, 17-7-1. Joaquin Buckley Numanza, 19-6. Two just talented guys, about to throw down. 6'5", 10" gives Wonderboy 2 inches in height. Joaquin 1 inch in reach, 76 inches to 75. Southpaw. I didn't actually know Buckley was a southpaw. With that left hand orthodox with Wonderboy Thompson. I might have spoke too soon about oldest fighter on the card, because Wonderboy Thompson is 41 years old. That is right. The number 9 ranked welterweight in the world. Wonderboy Thompson from South Carolina. 8 KOs and 1 submission of his 17 career victories. He has 1 loss by KO and 1 loss by submission. And, you know, fun fact, he has not been on the prelim since 2014. He has been on a main card the last decade. First prelim appearance since 2014. Started off his UFC career absolutely fantastic, absolutely perfect. He was on a 8-1 streak, including a 7-fight win streak, before running to Tyron Woodley, having a fight of the night, fight of the year, contender draw. After that, lost the majority decision, followed it up with a win over Jorge Masvidal, then lost to Darren Till, Darren Till's last impressive win. Then got knocked out for the first time in his career by Anthony Pettis. 2019 rolls around, beats Vicente Luque, fight of the night. 2020 rolls around, beats Jeff Neal in dominant fashion. After that, outgrappled by Gilbert Burns, outgrappled by Bilal Muhammad. 2022 as one of the fight of the year contenders against Kevin Holland. Last time he fought, though, was in December. Got submitted by the wonderful Shavkat Rakhmonov. So Wonderboy Thompson, it's been tough going. 1-3 in his last 4, mind you. One of those is to a champion, one of those is to a title challenger, and one of those is to the next guy in line. So let's not hold against him. It's all grappling. This is all grappling. So I'll be very curious to see how Joaquin Buckley attacks this fight. Joaquin Buckley is the favorite, minus 190. Wonderboy Thompson, the underdog, plus 160. Joaquin Buckley, 30 years old, from Missouri. Last picked up a win in Missouri, fun fact, of his, if this will load, thank you very much, 19 career wins, bingo, he has 13 knockouts. Now, of his 6 losses, he's actually been KO'd 4 times, fun fact. You know, looking through his UFC tenure, Joaquin debuted against Kevin Holland, got knocked out. After that, went on a 5-1 run, getting knocked out by Alessio De Cherco in shocking fashion. Crazy knockouts of Impa Kansagana, Antonio Rojo, Jordan Wright, Albert Durev, performance of the night. His last 2 losses were at middleweight to Nazarene Imavov, which is aged perfectly, and Chris Curtis, who knocked him out. Since then, dropped down to welterweight, knocked out Andre Filho, unanimous decision over Knox Morono, TKO'd Vicente Luque, and most recently in May, beat the wonderfully talented Nursultan Ruzaboyev. So Joaquin Buckley coming in here with some momentum. He landed 4 takedowns in this fight. I know Buckley is going to be coming, saying he's coming to strike. He's going to grapple. Okay, if Wonderboy Thompson fights anyone who remotely grapples, that's the person he beats. The only reason Kevin Holland didn't beat him is because he refused to grapple him. So we are going to go with Joaquin Buckley. I'm going to say decision. I'm really just going to go with the decision here. Maybe you get a Buckley ground and pound TKO. Maybe get a Buckley submission. I don't really see that. I truly just see him breaking him down and just grappling him when he sees the striking isn't going to work. Because that's just what everyone does. Everyone just kind of says screw it, and they turn to the grappling once the fight gets going. So this should be an entertaining fight. I do got Buckley going into the top 10 after this. And if one, I just think we should do Wonderboy Thompson versus MVP. I think we should do that just to do it. Maybe it won't be exciting, but after how I think this fight's going to go, I think Wonderboy's going to lose, so. We'll have to see what happens. After that, though, we get into our main card, and we got a lot of stuff to break down on this main card, kicking us off the first fight in the women's bantamweight division as the number 2 ranked Ketlin Vieira takes on the number 3 ranked Kayla Harrison. This is for the title shot. Okay, this is for the next title shot of the winner of the co-main event. Ketlin Fenomeno Vieira, 14-3. Kayla Harrison doesn't even need a nickname. Her name is her prowess, 17-1. Both women are 5'8". 2-inch reach advantage for Ketlin, 68-66. Southpaw for Kayla, orthodox for Ketlin Vieira. This is your biggest favorite on the entire freaking card. Kayla Harrison minus 800. The 34-year-old on a little 2-fight win streak from Florida. Over 17 wins, 13 finishes, 6 KOs and 7 subs. Submitted Holly Holmes in her debut at UFC 300. Manhandled her, submitted her 2 minutes in round number 2. Kayla Harrison is so dominant. The PFL's greatest woman champion of all time. The only woman to beat her, Larissa Pacheco, didn't even win on the verdict scorecard, and she had previously fought in her before. So Kayla Harrison, never been finished, never really looks out of touch with MMA. Great at grappling, great at ground and pound, great at submitting. She's the total package, and she is here to make the women's bantamweight division great again. Let me tell you that. It is a desperate need of a little Kayla Harrison shakeup. And will Kayla be the one to do it? I don't know. Maybe Ketlin Vieira will come out and shock the masses. Ketlin Vieira is your number 2 woman's bantamweight. And I mean, she's been around the block a fat minute as well. She is 33 years old from Brazil. Of her 14 victories, she has 2 KOs and 4 submissions. And of her 3 losses, only ever been KO'd once. Last loss was actually in 2023 to the current champion, Raquel Pantin, by split decision. There you go. Fun fact. Holds wins over Holly Holmes, Misha Tate, Kansa Ngannou. Irene Deltona actually knocked her out in 2019. But yeah, Ketlin Vieira, she's talented. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We are picking Kayla Harrison by submission here. Round 1, round 2, ground and pound. Kayla Harrison is beating Ketlin Vieira to a pulp. I really hope she does. If Ketlin Vieira wins, I'll actually be sad. The whole reason Kayla Harrison was brought over to the UFC was to save the bantamweight division because it's in a terrible state in the woman's side of things. I just really rooting for Kayla Harrison here. So that's what I think will happen. Submission round 2, I could see ground and pound round 1. Kayla Harrison mauls her. Kayla Harrison dominates. Yeah, that's definitely what we're going to see here. And Kayla Harrison, by the way, one UFC fight is already the number 11 woman's pound for pound. If she wins this one, she's got to be up there for women's pound for pound. She could beat Valentina Shevchenko. I'm very confident in Kayla Harrison's abilities. After that, they did a little swap around on the bout order here. So this was supposed to open the main card. Instead, it'll be the second fight on the main card. You have the 15th ranked welterweight, Kevin Holland, taking on the number 10 ranked middleweight, Roman Dolidze, in the men's middleweight division. Kevin Holland, kind of like Jessica Andrade, just bounces around multiple divisions, gets ranked in multiple divisions, is super fun, super exciting in all his fights, and is always hunting for the finish. And yeah, but Kevin Holland, one of my favorite fighters, hands down. And Kevin Holland is actually the favorite over Roman Dolidze, minus 170 to plus 145 in favor of Kevin Holland. Kevin Trailblazer Holland, 26-11 with one no contest. Roman Dolidze, 13-3. 6'3 to 6'2. Kevin's got an inch in height, and he also has a notable 5 inches in reach, 81 inch reach to 76 inch reach. Both men stand in the orthodox position. Let's do start things out with the number 10 ranked middleweight in the world, Roman Dolidze. And this is actually more fascinating, is that Roman took a short notice fight this past summer to fight Anthony Smith at light heavyweight. So Roman Dolidze, similar to Kevin Holland, he can fluctuate between divisions. The 36-year-old, born in Georgia, now lives and trains in Las Vegas at Extreme Couture, same gym as Chris Curtis and Sean Strickland. Of his 13 career victories, he's got 7 KOs and 3 submissions. And of his 3 losses, he's never been finish. That's right. You know, it's actually tough to beat Roman Dolidze. Okay. Only the greats have done it. Like Phil Hawes, like what's his face, Nazarene Imavov, who just beat him. I can't really pick his style because, you know, sometimes he's coming in with this aggressive striking. Other times he's just not really going for a strike. He's more of a grappler. But Roman, been with the UFC now for 4 years. He has some great wins over Kyle Daukaus, Phil Haas, Jack Hermanson. Marvin Vettori and Nazarene Imavov have both beat him. I forgot about that Marvin Vettori fight. So was on a 2-fight losing streak. 1-1 this year. Beat Anthony Smith on short notice, which probably the biggest win in his career. If you think about it, that's definitely actually Roman's biggest win in his career. So good for him. But he's something. He's something. I'll tell you what he isn't. He isn't no Kevin Holland, man. Kevin Holland, the most active UFC fighter I've ever seen. He has sold some kind of record. 31 years old from Texas. Of his 26 wins, 13 KOs, 9 subs, 22 of 26 wins by finish. We love that. We love to see that in a fighter. He's only ever been KO'd once. He has been submitted 3 times of those 11 losses. So usually if he's losing, it's by a close decision. And he's actually supposed to fight Chris Curtis on this card, but Chris Curtis pulled out. So in steps his teammate, Roman Dolidze. Kevin, been with the UFC since 2018. We've gone over his story so many times, from talking to Dana White in the Katara series, debuting on short notice up and away against Thiago Santos, going on a nice little 3-fight win streak for running to Brendan Allen, going 5-0 in 2020, the fighter of the year in 2020, then running into Derek Brunson, Marvin Vettori, couldn't grapple, drops down to welterweight, great round 2 finishes of Alex Oliveira and Tim Means, runs into Khamzat Chimaev, gets rewarded with Wonderboy Thompson, knocks out Santiago Ponzinibbio, submits Michael Chiesa, then loses a very close split decision to Jack Della Maddalena. Jack Della Maddalena is as legit as they come, and I honestly think Kevin Holland beat him in that fight. Then fights MVP, quickly learns that MVP is a weird style to beat, and fought in June of this year and submitted Michael Olkojacek in 1.5 minutes with an armbar. He's so fun. He's so feisty. I never know if he's going to knock you out, if he's going to take you to a decision, or if he's just going to freaking break your arm off. Kevin Holland, give him to me. I kind of like submission for this one. You know, Roman's never been finished, but I do think he might get a bit aggressive, get caught, or get put in a guillotine choke or something. And now that I know that he loves to throw up arm bars, Kevin Holland, you best bet I'll be rocking with you. After that, we head to the men's bantamweight division as the number 10-ranked Jose Aldo takes on the number 11th-ranked Mario Bautista. This one, another interesting one. Jose Aldo, the great, one of the greatest of all time, 32-8. This will be his 41st MMA bout. He was actually doing some boxing in his 2 years off from MMA. Mario Bautista, 14-2, 5'9", 5'7", holds 2 inches over Jose, but Jose has the reach, 70 inches to 69. Switch stance for Mario, orthodox for Jose Aldo. Jose Aldo in this one, plus 145 underdog. Mario Bautista is the favorite at minus 175. And we're fluctuating between picking the heavy favorites, picking the underdogs. You never really know who we're going to go with. Jose, 38 years old. He's from Brazil. 32 career wins, 16 knockouts, 2 subs. So like 18 of 32 career wins. A lot of decisions in there. But when you're fighting that long, it happens. Of his 8 losses, 4 by KO, 1 by submission. And I mean, he's been fighting since 2004. Probably beyond that if we look at his lifespan. Jose Aldo, one of the greatest featherweight champions of all time. He's fought in 4 at bantamweight. He is just, his reputation precedes him. That's all I'm going to say. His reputation precedes him. Jose Aldo, you know him, you love him. Very few hate him. Came back to the UFC after losing to Mirab Dovizioso in August of 2022, defended all of his takedowns in that fight, and he beat Jonathan Martinez handsomely, 30-27, back at UFC 301 in May of this year, completely dismantled him, landed a takedown. He looked great in it. And Jose, the ultimate gatekeeper. I mean, listen to the last 3 guys that beat him before Mirab. Piotr Jan, former champion. Marlon Moraes, title challenger. Alexander Volkanovski, champion. Actually, let's keep going. Max Holloway, champion. Conor McGregor, champion. He only loses to talented fighters. He's beaten Marlon Vera, beaten Pedro Munhoz, beaten Ron Font. All the stats point to the fact he shouldn't beat Mario Bautista, but I'm a Mario Bautista fan. There's just something about Mario Bautista. You know, Mario, he's ranked number 11th. He's just been having a great run. Having a great run here. 31 years old on a 6-fight win streak. He's from Arizona. Of his 14 career wins, 3 KOs and 6 subs. He's been finished in both of his losses. Mind you, those losses were to Trevin Jones and Corey Sandhagen. But he hasn't lost since 2021. Since then, rear naked chokeholds of Brian Kelleher, triangle armbar of Benito Lopez, submitting Guido Canetti, beating Damon Blackshear, fought earlier this year in January and beat Ricky Simon, really showed off his striking in that one, outstriking him significantly, 112-45, showing how well-rounded Mario Bautista can be. Look, I know that Jose Aldo, all signs point to Jose getting this one done. Look at what he did to Jonathan Martinez. But I think Mario's going to mix it up, be a bit tricky for him, be almost like a gecko, like a spider, being able to be evasive of him. I got to give this one to Mario Bautista. Really, truly, I mean, Jose Aldo, I loved rooting for him against Jonathan Martinez. But Mario Bautista, I've rode with him through all six of these fights. It just feels criminal to not pick him to beat Jose Aldo here. And if I could justify it, I'll say that grappling Jose Aldo, it's never really been his specialty. He's hard to take down, but when you get him down, that's where the key work is done. And Mario, you know, he mixes it up. He throws strikes. He's great at takedown defense. We'll see how he does against Jose striking. And also, 38 years old, Jose's getting up there. I don't know how much more he's got left in him. Mario might be the one to finally break through. We'll have to see, though. Should be an exciting fight. Should be an exciting fight. I mean, third fight on the main card. And right after this, we will dive into our first of our two title fights. And this one, an absolute banger, an absolute heater, the greatest fight in UFC's history as your women's bantamweight champion, Raquel Pennington, takes on Juliana Pena. Gonna be so boring. I hope not. I really hope. If this is actually boring, I can't stand it. I just can't stand it. I'm sorry. It's just, I know it's their fight styles, but I mean, come on. Oh my goodness. These two are just, you know, I don't even know how Julia Pena is getting a title shot. Like the fact, I don't even know how they're justifying that Julia Pena is able to get a title shot. But Raquel Rocky Pennington, 16-9. Juliana, the Venezuelan Vixen, 12-5. 5'7" to 5'6" gives Raquel 1 inch in height. She also has, Julia Pena has the reach advantage, 69-67, orthodox stance for both of these women. Who should we start with? Should we start with our champion, Hockwell's coming in, minus 185 favorite, Juliana Pena, the challenger, plus 150. Ooh, how about that? Well, plus 150 underdog. Who will I pick? It's been the year of new champions. All right, Hockwell won the belt in January, just dominated. So Maribel Silva dominates Raquel Pennington in round number one, wins it. Then proceeds to lose the next four. And Raquel can't even finish her. She's throwing up submission attempts, trying anything she can. Can't do nothing. But she's on the run of a lifetime. Six-fight win streak. I mean, last woman to beat her, Holly Holmes, 2020. She's beaten Kelton Vieira, beaten Aspen Ladd, Macy Chison. It's been all right. She's actually fought Amanda Nunes for the belt. Got TKO'd in round five in that. Pennington is a decision machine. Decision machine. Through and through as they come. From Colorado, 36 years old. Of those, 16 career wins. She has one KO and four subs. She's been finished by submission and by knockout once. 17 of 24 pro fights have gone to a decision. Just, just icky. Way too many decisions. I don't even know what her style is. She'll do a takedown. She'll outstrike you. She's a boring champion. She's a decision fighter. It's unfortunate, but you know, maybe the woman that we all hated, the woman that was trash-talking Amanda Nunes' retirement, maybe she'll be the one to finally bring some excitement back to the women's bantamweight division. That's the Venezuelan Vixen, Juliana Pena, plus 150 underdog, 35 years old from Washington. Of her 12 career wins, 3 KOs and 4 subs. Of her 5 career losses, 1 by KO, 2 by submission. And, you know, she's been in the title shot picture. And now her last 3 straight fights, okay? Ben won the Ultimate Fighter back in 2013, went a little 4-fight win streak to start her UFC career, and then ran to Valentina Shevchenko. Then after that, ran into Jermaine Durandamy. But finally, got a rear naked chokehold of Sarah McMahon. There was no one else to fight Amanda Nunes. Like, okay, you can fight Amanda Nunes. And she pulls off one of the greatest upsets in UFC history, submitting Amanda Nunes at UFC 269. It was incredible. It was incredible. And at the time, this was peak Amanda Nunes. Like, no one could even touch Amanda Nunes. She had just starched Megan Anderson in round number one, and Julia Pena pulls off the upset. Now Amanda Nunes rematches her 8 months later, dismantles her, 50-40s her. I mean, Julia Pena didn't win a single minute of that fight. And then she was actually slated to fight her at UFC 289 in June of 2023. But unfortunately, Pena pulled out of that fight, or they pulled her from that fight. Aldana fought Nunes, and of course she retired. And Julia Pena had a lot of mixed words to say about that. But at the end of the day, this is women's MMA. This is not exciting at all. Neither of these women... I really want to see hunger in this fight. That's what I want to see. I want to see a drive, a desire to get victory here. I don't know if I'm going to see that, but we are going to pick Juliana Pena. We are predicting a new women's bantamweight champion, just simply because I can't stand Raquel Pennington. I think Pena has a more attack-forward strategy. She can land a takedown. She can even get her up against the fence, land some punches, lock in a rear naked chokehold. That's the name of the game, all right? And I don't think Pennington punches that hard, so that's kind of a benefit, because when Pena was rushing forward against Nunes, she kept getting clipped, and she would literally be rushing forward, like, just throwing punches as she's going, get clipped, fall down, get just ragdolled for that entire round. She's fun. She's feisty. Just bring that thunder to this fight. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, that will bring us to our final matchup of the evening, and it is the best fight of the night. You have your number 8 ranked light heavyweight in the world. That's right, number 8 ranked Khalil Roundtree Jr. taking on your current men's light heavyweight champion, the current number 2 pound for pound fighter on the planet. He's Poatan. He's your current runner for fighter of the year. It is Alex Pereira, 11-2 with 11 of those wins coming by knockout. Khalil Roundtree Jr., 14-5 with one no contest, 3 inches in height for Pereira, 6'4" to 6'1", 3 inches in reach, 79 inches to 76. He fights orthodox. Khalil fights southpaw. Someone has to go out. Pereira, -455 favorite. Khalil coming in as a +350 underdog. I like that, though. I like that. We always love a little good underdog story, don't we? Do we love the underdog story? We'll have to see it comes true here. Alex Pereira, 37 years old, from Brazil, now lives and trains in Connecticut with his good buddy, Glover Teixeira. We love Glover Teixeira here at the podcast. Like I said, 9 KOs of his 2 losses. Been submitted once, been knocked out once. But, I mean, dude is just an animal. 8-1. In the UFC. 8-1. It's weird to think he debuted in the UFC only 3-0. 3-1, actually, in MMA. And look where he's come until now. I mean, he's knocked out Andre Michelis. He's knocked out Sean Strickland. Knocked out Israel Adesanya. Knocked out Jeep Roska twice. Knocked out Jamal Hill. Only losses to Israel Adesanya, who had to fight him 4 times beforehand before finally beating him. And he's just, he might be the GOAT. He might be the current GOAT in the UFC. Pereira on the run of a lifetime. And, I mean, to think he won the belt against Jeep Roska. Okay, incredible victory there. Then main event UFC 300, knocks out Jamal Hill in spectacular fashion in 3 minutes. Then fights Jeep Roska again, saving the card that McGregor absolutely ruined back in June. Knocks out Jeep Roska in more dominant fashion. 13 seconds in round 2, almost knocked him out at the end of round 1. Alex Pereira is just on the run of a lifetime, enjoying the ride. And for being 37 years old, 37, you're past, supposed to be past your prime. He is in his prime currently, which is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous, and I freaking love it. So, big supporter of Alex Pereira, rooting for him in this one. I mean, I'll just tell you right now, I'm picking him. I'll just tell you I'm picking him, because whenever I root against Alex Pereira, he always proves me wrong. He's just so incredible. And unfortunately, you know, I don't even think Khalil should be fighting for the belt. I'm actually happy he's been blessed with this. He's been a journeyman, and I think this is where his run ends. But, you know, he's very deserving of getting one last shot, at least. It should have gone to Magomed. I have no idea when Magomed Ankalaev didn't get a title shot, but that's always background politics. 34 years old on a little 5-fight win streak from Las Vegas. Of his 14 career victories, 9 by KO. Of his 5 career losses, 2 by knockout, 1 by submission. He was actually supposed to fight Jamal Hill back at UFC 303, but then I think it was Khalil had to pull out, and then Ulberg stepped in, and then Jamal Hill stepped out, then Anthony Smith stepped in, then Ulberg came out, and then Roman Dolidze stepped in, which actually ties back to Roman Dolidze fighting on this card. How about that? Khalil been with the UFC since 2016. It's weird to think when he debuted, he was getting submitted by Tyson Pedro in round number 1. Okay, then he would go out and actually knock out Paul Craig, knock out Gokhan Sakai, then he'd get knocked out by Giant Walker, then he beat Eric Anders, then he'd lose to Ion Kudalaba, then he'd lose to Marcin Prachinio. That was back in 2021, okay? This was a long time ago. That little 2016 to 2021, for that 5 years, that was a different Khalil Roundtree Jr. Since 2021, 5-fight win streak, 4 finishes, all 4 of them coming by KO. Damn near blew out Modestus Bukauskas' knee. His knockout of Carl Roberson, brutal. Looks like he was beating a man senseless on the street. Dustin Jacoby fight. Okay, that one he did not win. All right, he got a lucky split decision. He did not win that. But he backed it up, knocking out Chris Daukaus. Last fought in December of 2023. Knocked down Anthony Smith. Dominant fashion. Drops him and then walks for him with his fist in the air. Hammer fist position. Like, are you going to stop this, Herb? Are you going to stop this? And Herb stopped it before he laid down Thor's hammer right on Anthony Smith's face. But, I mean, this fight's going. It's going in round 1 or 2. Okay, this fight is not lasting long. These are 2 power punch strikers. Okay, and I know people are saying, like, oh, is Khalil Roundtree Jr. going to shoot for a takedown? Khalil hasn't attempted a takedown his entire UFC career. Fun fact, actually, Alex Pereira has actually attempted more takedowns. He actually landed more takedowns than what's-his-face, Khalil Roundtree Jr. But Pereira, he's got the height, he's got the reach, he's got the notoriety, but it's been the year of upsets. Guys, I do want to point that out. You know, I'm very confident in Pereira, but like I said, I mean, if we go through the year, Steve Versa getting a title shot, almost being Alex Arpitoa, that was crazy. Marab beating Sean O'Malley, that was crazy. Ito Pira knocking out Volkanovski. Islam Makhachev almost losing to Dustin Poirier before pulling out of the bag. Bilal Muhammad dismantling Leon Edwards. Driscus Duplessis beating Sean Strickland, submitting Adesanya. Both of Pereira's knockouts. John Jones never fights, but yeah. It's just been an absolutely crazy year for all of our UFC champions. But yes, we are going with Alex Pereira. And I mean, the numbers don't lie. The numbers don't lie. It just feels like it's a round one knockout. That's just truly what I feel. It's just truly what I feel. Round one knockout for him. It's coming. It's coming. We are going Alex Pereira money line. We're going Alex Pereira round one knockout. I don't actually bet, but the way I watch these fights, I get so hype about them, and I don't have money on the line, makes me realize I should never put money on the line. I could win a lot, probably, but it'd probably send my stress through the roof. So that's all we got for the UFC 307 predictions, but it should be a great card. I'm actually really pumped for this one. When I was first hearing about it, I was like, oh, this is going to be an average card, but no, it's gotten closer. I've gotten myself hyped. Going to have a bunch of my boys down. It's going to be fun. And then literally not even 7 hours, 8 hours after this card ends, I'll have to be up before the Vikings game against the Jets in London. So it's just an absolutely amazing time. I am thrilled. I'm excited. Alex Pereira, Julian Pena, Mario Bautista, Kayla Harrison, Kevin Holland. Those are our main card predictions, guys. Thank you so much for listening. I always have fun. I always have fun talking about UFC, talking about all my fight predictions. It's always a good time. Here on the podcast, make sure to check out episode 126, part 1 and 2, my great interview with Ryan Neihardt, Jane Watson, and Cole Wachter. Also, check out my episode 125 before that as we recapped UFC Paris and NFL Week 4. We already know our NFL Week 5 predictions if you watch episode 126. As for this one, guys, let me know who you guys are picking. Let me know what topics you want to hear. We're looking to average 3 episodes every single week of the month. I don't know if that's even humanly possible, but we'll have to see. Guys, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.